everyone, and welcome to the Day We Could podcast. I'm your host, Britt Lawton, and today I'm privileged to be sitting with Patrick Rourke, who's visiting us from Lesotho. So Patrick's been doing a short-term residency with us at the Day We Could workshop in Arts and Main in Mabaneng, and he's recently had a showcase of some new paintings and monotypes at the Blue House, 151 Jan Smuts Avenue, Johannesburg. So welcome, Patrick. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's very good to be here. So it's very good to be back and very good to be involved with a project like David's project, all of you guys there. That's fantastic. I'm going away feeling really happy, I think.
It's been a privilege to have you work with us and stuff because you do have a fantastic reputation as an established artist. Do you want to give us a bit of an overview of your career in the arts?
It's been quite a long career, I guess. I mean, I've been working as an artist now since 1984, I think, when the Alex Art Center closed down. That's when I took the decision to basically pursue my life as an artist. I have always had, I think, a kind of a dual process happening in my own artwork. At the time, I was teaching ceramics at the Alex Art Center, and I've always been a potter as well as a painter. In writing for the blog on the website, I realized that, in fact, this is one of the things that has been very good on the one hand, but perhaps also quite a problem on the other hand. In as much as working as a potter, I've not had to pursue the art side of my life that much. I've not had to be that forceful in trying to get into galleries. I've lived outside of that system most of the time. I mean, I've had a long career, but I've not really worked with galleries that much, so I'm quite happy to be working with one now.
Oh, fantastic. Yes, I mean, you've got a pretty solid foundation in terms of understanding galleries, though. Do you not work with one in Lesotho, am I?
Yes, look, I've run galleries, I've had galleries. Lesotho is a very impoverished place as far as the arts are concerned. There is more of a focus on crafts in Lesotho. Fine arts tends to be ignored a little bit and misunderstood quite a lot, you know. But that is changing. There is a national gallery opening in Seru that will be showcasing Basutu artists. There will be a constant stream of Lesotho videos, animations, and films that will be showing within the gallery complex. So there is a lot that is going to be happening in Lesotho. One of the things that I was very interested in is the fact that David kept talking about education. And it's one of the things that I'm particularly interested in Lesotho. I work a lot with schools in Lesotho. I've just written a textbook for local schools. I believe very strongly, in fact, that arts education is imperative in getting people to think more creatively, entrepreneurially, to think in a much broader sense rather than in the sense of being educated as people who memorize facts and who are able to spark these facts even though they have absolutely no relationship to their lives as individuals. For me, the idea that arts education is not just about getting people to play around with paint and paper and to enjoy themselves. It is far more about a complete change in the way that people think and in the way that people approach solving problems. The way that they can actually take a situation, however dire it might seem, and actually do something constructive with it. So I think it's very important. And when David started talking about arts education, I thought we are talking about the same thing.
And I suppose it's those, you know, when those values are in alignment, it's so much more important because you've got the same understanding and respect for what the purpose of the arts are.
Exactly, that's right. I mean, the arts are not just kind of decorative, and they're not just for enjoyment. I mean, they serve a far more primal role in people's lives. And communities that are starved of the arts are starved of far more than they know, you know. So particularly in Lesotho, I mean, it's a blank page, really, you know. There is so much work to be done there. Yeah, I'm happy to have found kindred spirits here, and I think that going back, I will very clearly work on bridging the link between here and there, you know. I received a frantic WhatsApp message. Where are you? Children want to put the mosaic up. Why are you there? You know, what's going on? So I have to go back, and we have to continue. There's a school in Hatolwane where we began putting up a mosaic. We had to shut down the process because of the virus. Yeah. But now there are some kids who insist that they'll come back with masks on and everything, and they need to finish this mosaic. I mean, if you could possibly understand the level of hunger for the arts in the Lesotho, it's phenomenal, actually.
Do you think that has a lot to do with that environment?
Well, yes and no. I mean, a lot of people say, well, look, it's a mountainous country, you know. You go to any mountainous country in the world, and the population is more focused on surviving than on decorative or the arts or anything like that. But I think, personally, I think it has a lot to do with the missionaries and with the introduction of quite a sort of puritanical form of Christianity that had anything that preached that anything to do with visual elements, anything to do with the arts, with music, with expression, should be pressed down or subverted. So for me, I think it's very important that particular aspect of European kind of colonialization in the Lesotho has to be not subverted, but there needs to be an alternative given, you know, or an alternative way of doing things actually being implemented.
What kind of resources or tools do you use to?
I was very lucky to be involved with Genoveva Fernandez. She was the, or she still is, or was at the time, the wife of the Spanish ambassador. But she was a very serious artist in her own right. So I mean, as far as I'm concerned, she was a Spanish artist who also happened to be involved in the embassies, you know. And she came down to Marija with her husband and came down to the studio, which I was just in the process of setting up at the time. And she said immediately, listen, I need to be involved, you know. So she would come down with people from the embassies with, you know, car loads full of art materials.
Wow.
And these we take into, initially we worked in the studio, working with students from Marija. After a while, there were so many students that we couldn't actually fit them in, and we then took everything to the schools. And so, we've been working with the embassy people now more and more on my own, because they've mostly gone back to Europe or wherever they came from because of the virus. Yeah?
Yeah,
but that will all change. I mean, it'll come back again. But the work in the schools itself is a constant, and there's a huge amount to be done. So we need to get materials there.
Yeah.
I mean, things like mosaics, for instance, which are, one would imagine, are fairly sort of material-heavy processes, but they're not really. I mean, you buy a box of tiles, you buy different colored tiles, and you start chopping them up, and with that you can make a huge mosaic, you know. And obviously paint and stuff like that is fairly easy to access, you know.
Like, is there, if somebody wanted to find out more about it or help you in some way?
It is very much a part of the Marija Arts Centre,
okay.
Right? and it's part of the Meridian Museum and Archives. It's a part of Sirita Samarija, which means the shadow that's cast on Meridian, not in a negative sense, but in the sense of the shade that's cast, and the shade that becomes a kind of place that you can rest in. So certainly, I'm not working entirely on my own. There are many people, more and more people, that are coming to Meridian and coming to work within the arts ethos there. I tend to end up going off on my own because that's generally how I work, you know. But there are others who are continuing where I left off, and I'm sort of digging new ground elsewhere, you know.
That's fantastic. So you're kind of leaving like a bit of a legacy in the locations.
And then, as I said, there are others who continue with it, and probably do a better job than I do. I have to listen to my own inner kind of urgings, if you like.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Could you tell us maybe a little bit about Lesotho and Meridija, where you're from?
Well, my own involvement in Lesotho, it's an independent country. Within Southern Africa, we believe in Lesotho. We believe that most of Southern Africa actually is still Lesotho, you know, and we have to reclaim that territory. But that's just a joke, you know. But it's a country that the French missionaries were very much involved in the actual formation of the country. Because this is the time of Mashreshwe, and he went up onto Tababasu, the mountain, and he was able to hold off the Boers, he was able to hold off the Zulus, he was able to hold off a lot of the people trying to, in a sense, overrun the country. And at that time, the initial French missionaries came to Lesotho and came up to Tababasu and began working with Mashreshwe and introduced a lot of the kind of European ideas that permeate the Lesotho culture, you know, a lot of the ideas that I feel I need to unravel. Yeah, but my family came to Lesotho in 1860 as missionaries, so we've been there some time. I am the last of my family living there. I believe very strongly that the arts has a very, very big role still to play in Lesotho culture. In a way, what I'm doing is a small part of that regeneration of the idea of the arts, you know?
Would you like to just maybe give us a little bit of an overview of your practice in the sense of your painting practice and even your pottery practice?
Okay. As I say, I've always been an artist. I grew up in the arts, you know. I've always painted, I've always drawn. At one point, I was invited to a rifle firing in Kolonyama in Lesotho. And that began a fairly long involvement in ceramics. I began potting. Lesotho is quite a rich country in terms of pottery practice. There are a lot of people that make these very beautiful big clay vessels, and there's a lot of clay there. Meridija itself, they dug, the architects came to build a building and they dug down to see how far the clay went. They had to dig 40 meters to get to the end of the clay. So it's a clay-rich area.
Yeah.
So as I said, I've always had this kind of dual sensibility of, on the one hand, I'm an artist, on the other hand, I work in clay, you know. But now that I'm getting perhaps a little older, I'm leaving more and more of the clay, I think, leaving it to one side and focusing more on the painting again. So my practice is quite complicated. I've never really, as I say, bothered too much with galleries, so I've had to push my own agenda, in a sense. I've had to take on a fair amount of work that might not be considered artwork. I've spent the last 4 to 5 years, no, I think it's 4 years, overseeing the building of a residence that I designed in Lesotho. And that's become a kind of almost like a three-dimensional artwork. I build a lot of pizza ovens, things like that, which I'm hoping to actually leave. I want to get back to just purely making art. We have, thankfully, been given a piece of ground in Mauritian where I'm going to build an artist residency. So it'll be a residence for myself and my wife, and then small chalets and studios that we are going to then bring artists in from all parts of the world to work within the community, and then we're going to send artists from the community out to the rest of the world. I think that the idea of cross-pollination in the arts is an important one. In fact, Senzo Shibangu, he came down and worked in the studio at some stage a couple of years back. We have sent artists to Dar es Salaam. We sent artists to China. So there has been the beginning of that kind of exchange. You know? And the more that happens, the richer the cultural kind of ground will become in Mauritius itself and the city as a whole, and wherever the other artists come from. You know?
Absolutely, and I mean, just like the importance that you place on arts education and that kind of expansion through culture
precisely,
with the different arts.
Exactly, that's right. So. And so there will be artists emerging from, and there have been already, artists emerging from the schools that become pivotal role players in the development of the arts as a whole in Mauritius, you know, or in Lesotho. Without a doubt, there is an artist, Mutlatsi, who is, to all intents and purposes, he is completely illiterate. He was a shepherd. And he came to me one day and said, please give me some clay. And I gave him clay, and he began making the most extraordinary, the absolutely most extraordinary figures in clay. And people like him need to be coming here, working in this environment here. There was at one stage there was the idea that he could go to work in France at the same studio that Picasso worked at. So once it opens up again, I would love to see Mutlatsi here.
Well, let's hope so, because I mean, environment does play a huge role in the influence of what the artist creates.
It plays a huge role. I mean, look, the arts are essentially a language, aren't they? I mean, we communicate through the arts in a very deep and very fundamental way. It is a communication. There are things that need to be said by people like Mutlatsi, by others in the arts there, that the voice needs to actually be put out, you know?
Mm.
Important.
Well, let's hope. I mean, that does, well, the future does allow for that kind of exposure to take place.
I believe it will. I mean, I think it's critical that it does actually happen. And I think that I'm not the only one who thinks that way. So I believe that's going to happen. Yeah.
You did a brief residency at the workshop, and
yes,
you created
yes.
a series of monotypes and even a painting that was inspired by the kind of scenery and environment
exactly.
around there.
Exactly.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about
the
story?
It was very interesting. First of all, I was walking backwards and forwards to the studio. You know, when one begins working, one needs a kind of underpinning to what one is doing. You can work, but you do need to somehow have a kind of a sense of direction, a kind of, if you like, a conceptual underpinning for the whole thing. And I bought some peanuts from this Indian shopkeeper, and I didn't think much of it, other than thinking to myself, here's this guy, he's in probably one of the most edgy parts of Johannesburg. You know, he doesn't speak a word of English. He doesn't speak a word of any of the African languages. He only speaks Gujarati or whatever language he speaks. And yet, here he is making a living. And I remember thinking to myself at the time, this is actually very admirable, actually, you know, quite extraordinary that somebody can actually do this.
Yeah, like fully operate in a space like that without
in a space
the
that is actually quite hostile, you know. And it's not as though the locals actually enjoy the fact that he's there making this living, you know. then I kind of forgot about it, and I went back to the studio and I was drawing, and I was drawing a face. And then I realized, okay, hold on, this is the shopkeeper, right? And then I got to think, well, wouldn't it be amazing to take just like very ordinary people, I mean, people who are dealing with like daily issues, you know, of survival, and actually say, this person, I'm going to make a monument for this person, you know, build a sculpture of some sort that will, in a sense, celebrate this life, you know? So I did a diptych of his face and the sculpture that would mark his existence, in a sense. I mean, it's a bit fanciful, but it became the underpinning of what I was doing there. So then I would go out and I'd walk, much to the concern of everyone in the studio. But I did it anyway, and I would come back with subjects that I would draw, and subjects that I would then, in a sense, conceptualize, sculptures, monumental kind of sculpture that would say, this represents this person, you know, and gives some kind of dignity or something that this person perhaps needs in his or her life. You know? So that's what I ended up doing over the workshop.
Yeah.
Whether it makes any sense or not, I don't know. I mean, it became just a inquiry.
Well, I think from my perspective, considering the year that COVID's been and the kind of reality that's been thrown on a lot of people,
yes.
I think it has kind of made everyone realize the importance and the value of each individual
of
in
course,
a community.
Of course, exactly.
So I think the way that you're looking at it, where it's like your ordinary person, but if you were to represent them in a monument, like
there's some sort of
significance there, which is awesome.
Well, it also relates back to the work at the Constitutional Court, because there, when I began doing those images, the architects and Judge Albie Sachs and various others came and said, listen, please, we need to somehow relate this to the community. The community needs to be involved. And so, perhaps working with local schools, or getting everyone involved in the art making, but I was a bit greedy and decided I have been given this opportunity, I need to actually do it myself, you know. So the artwork I did, but the idea was that I went out into the streets, into the community, and spoke to local people on the street, and got their kind of impressions and their stories and their kind of life, and they would tell me about their lives and what have you, and images would appear in my mind as they were talking, and those are the images that I put down onto the plates that became the screens. So that's what I did now, then relates in a way to what was happening there. It was a kind of engagement with the people on the streets.
Mm. Yeah. And that idea of storytelling as well, and showing those stories in images.
Exactly.
You mentioned earlier the significance of like images and language. I wanted to know if you would weigh both of them equally, like the spoken word and the image.
That's quite a good question. I mean, that's quite a complex question to even begin to answer. It's an important question, actually. I really do. I mean, I love language. I love listening to different languages. I love the kind of cadences and the sounds and the. I mean, for me, one of the most extraordinary things is being in a city where I don't understand the language, and somehow needing to make sense of the sounds that come towards me. It hasn't happened often to me, but it has happened,
right.
And I have. When that has happened, it has been an almost extraordinary kind of travel. I was in Madrid, where very few people speak English. I speak no Spanish, and the people in Madrid are, they have no patience for people who don't speak Spanish. And it was just amazing. I had to do something. I had to find an art shop in the center of the town. And I had to somehow get from where we were, which was fairly much in the outskirts, I had to find my way to this art shop. It was an experience that I will not forget in a hurry. I found it extraordinary.
A different way of learning about the environment without knowing the language.
Well, exactly, that's right.
Yeah.
And learning how to actually interact with people without understanding what they were saying. I have deep respect for language. I really do. I have the most extraordinary admiration for the kind of human endeavor of making sense of these kind of sounds that come out of even the Basutu who have very much, who always had a spoken word, and then the missionaries came along and actually took the sounds and phonetically transcribed them into a written language. That's an extraordinary achievement, actually, and one that I have the greatest admiration for. And then obviously being involved in the arts, it is a part of a communication, a way of actually saying, even though things can be said quite obscurely. And I think that for me is one of the beauties of the arts, is that you can be very obscure, you can be very subtle, you don't have to be that lucid. You can be more suggestive, and you can say things in ways that you can't say in language. But at the same time, take nothing away from the spoken word or the written word. It's extraordinary, you know?
Absolutely. I think, I was speaking to somebody the other day about the most amazing invention that's ever been made, and I think often language is overlooked.
Of course.
Because that's how anything was communicated or taught or relayed or recorded.
Exactly.
Without art and language.
Exactly. Exactly. I think the two are very, very much intertwined and interlinked. No doubt. No doubt at all. And of course, you know, you have art and language, and then you have sound, you have music, you have all of these things that somehow become this incredible tapestry of people's understanding of reality, right?
Of the world around them, I suppose.
Exactly.
And also your own experiences, which get projected onto that understanding.
Absolutely.
So that circles back to your education program as well.
Exactly. It's a web that exists, and that needs to be maintained by educators, by artists, by musicians, by writers, and brought forward.
Absolutely, and I think, I can say I'm very lucky to know people like David and yourself who are continuing on that trajectory, and hopefully, you know, there will be the next generation that will continue to pick that up as well.
There will be, there's no doubt. I think it's a fundamental kind of human need to express and to kind of not just to express, but to have a kind of understanding of what expression can actually lead to. It is the fundamental one.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah.
Well, it's exciting to be able to be involved in it and to share it. So,
absolutely.
If we can maybe just go back to your residency at the workshop,
yes.
I wondered if you wanted to talk a little bit about your experience with the monotype process and the printmaking process.
Well, to be honest, I've had very little experience with that. I was teaching at the Alex Art Center, and there was a printmaking studio set up there. This was in the late 80s, right? Late 80s, early 90s. That was at the height of the apartheid kind of repression. It was the height of the fight between ANC and Inkatha. It was an extraordinarily tense time in Alex. But I was there, and I was enjoying it. I came from Lesotho. I heard the band members playing this very beautiful song, and I went up to them and said, "Wow, that's so amazing! What is the name of that song?" You know, And they looked at me as though I had crawled out under a rock and said, this is Inkosi-Sikelel'i.
Right.
So that was my kind of introduction to the music department at Alex, you know. But it was an amazing time. So there was a printmaking studio that was set up, and I said to the teacher at the time, I've never done this, can I just try my hand, you know? And I went in there, and apparently I made a mess, you know? So I was like, that's it, you stay in the pottery department. So my initial sense of printmaking was terminated. But then coming back here to the printmaking studio here, I mean, it's beautifully run. Everybody knows what they're doing. Everyone keeps it absolutely, absolutely spotless. And my natural kind of almost untidiness was catered for. You know? they were able to stop that. You know? And it was wonderful. I mean, it was really amazing working with those guys. An extraordinary experience, actually. And I know that this is something that I've long wanted to do, you know, to work with that printmaking process. When they first started talking about monotypes from watercolor, I was like, no, what are you talking about? Printmaking is always inky and that ink gets onto everything, you know. This is my experience at Alex, you know, that I was doing these little monotypes with ink, and the ink just gets everywhere. I mean, I have to say that I was blown away. I was transported completely. I think, though, sadly, it was right at the end that I really began to feel more comfortable with the process. But I intend to try and raise money to try and get a printing press down to Marija. You know, I think that my own sort of ancestral kind of genes are talking here, you know, a printing press, I've got to get one, I've got to install it, you know, I've got to start printing, you know.
Well, I agree, after seeing what you've produced at the workshop, I think it's the start of something. I mean, hopefully if you can do that.
It is the start of something, absolutely. No doubt. I don't think that I have a sense that I've tried it. I can, you know, I can go back to what I was doing before. I don't think I can do that now. Mm. Unfortunately, I have to continue.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, talking about my ancestral genes, that's what the missionaries did. They came to a place, they set up a printing press, and they printed their message. You know? And literally, that's what they did. And this is what I have to do as well. I have to get back, I have to print, I have to get these things out. You know?
But it's amazing that you've got that constant inspiration and urge to create and make more and share as well. I think that's a very important quality of an artist too, to want to share that knowledge, share that.
Again, as I said, it's a language. And with the language, it's a need to communicate.
And how is it, if I can ask, because you mostly work in isolation when you do your own paintings?
Yes, generally I work fairly much in isolation. And what I'm happy about coming here is that a large part of the whole art-making process, I can say it's in other more capable hands. So I'm very happy. I'm happy to be able to, in a sense, let go of some of the areas of art making that I am not terribly good at. You know,
exactly. We've been able to actually host your exhibition here at the Blue House, which looks beautiful, by the way. And we had a really fantastic opening last night.
Yes,
actually,
yes,
we had a great crowd of people through.
Yeah.
So, how do you feel about the show?
Well, I was very happy. I mean, I was happy to have everyone come. I mean, I think I understand it's not the ideal time to be having exhibitions and host, you know, having people come and whatever. So I was very happy to have people come. I think that there will be more people coming, I'm sure, as time goes on. I live in great faith that you guys will continue the process and will continue pushing and continue. I mean, things like the website.
patrickrourke.com.
Well, fantastic, exactly.
We've also got...
It's extraordinary, you know. And that alone is such an extraordinary tool. And the reaction has been amazing.
Wonderful.
It's been absolutely amazing.
And it's also it's been great to have a platform that's kind of got your story and your kind of your portfolio, because it tells all about the Constitutional Court project until your most recent paintings, which are these 45 by 45 series that we've got on show here as well.
Yes, exactly.
So it's a great collection of your work, and then we've also been able to put some of your paintings up on the David Crick portal in the viewing room.
Yes.
I think it's a great, it's going to be easy to continue promoting you and the work
Fantastic.
You're producing.
Fantastic.
Now you're leaving us with a beautiful body of monotypes as well.
Fantastic, yeah. And I'm going back and I'm going to start working.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for chatting
to me today.
Fabulous.
And we look forward to seeing what you get up to when you get back to Lesotho.